This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong. I have the pleasure of being here, as always, with Mary Lucas of Transitions Life Care. Mary, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I have a very exciting day planned. I am flying my first dog from the animal shelter to a new rescue in Virginia.
Wow. Now, this is
an ultimate freedom ride today.
This is a new experience for you then.
Yes. My brother-in-law bought an airplane to get his miles so he can become a commercial pilot. It's this little dinky. I hope he's not listening. Sorry, Jim. It's this little dinky 1970s, like, four-seater. And he's flying around aimlessly. And I was like, before you continue flying around aimlessly, spending a ton of gas money, let me give you a dog. And he was like, what? And so I'm boarding this. He also doesn't know it's a behavioral dog that's growling at everybody. So we're drugging this dog, and I'm sticking him on an airplane to Virginia.
Well, we look forward to the report next week on how everything goes. Please take lots of footage. This sounds like it's going to be quite the adventure.
It may be. Please just hope that my brother-in-law doesn't kill me by the end of today.
Well, there's no natural transition
from dog
airplane rides to polysaccharides.
Hey, but they kind of sound the same.
Hey, you're right. I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. But if you and I were having a conversation on polysaccharides, it would be rather short along the lines of, can you Google what polysaccharides are?
So we ChatGPT, please tell us.
Yeah. We need someone who's a bit more experienced in this regard, and we are pleased to welcome on the program, Dr. John Lewis. He is founder of and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition. Dr. Lewis, thanks so much for being on with us today.
Thank you guys for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
We're so excited. It's been a long show in the making. We've been planning this one for a bit, so I'm really excited to speak with you. Maybe first off, tell us, how did you become interested in health and nutrition and dietary supplementation?
Well, it goes back, I don't think for most people, not any one thing really defines your life, right? Or your journey or your path. It's been a long journey of interest that have evolved over time from when I was a little kid playing sports to when I was in college and I got into drug-free competitive bodybuilding, which shifted me into looking at how the body utilizes exercise and nutrition to achieve a very specific goal. And say what you will about, the average meathead bodybuilder, and I can say that because I used to be one. Those guys don't really, and ladies too, they don't take their passion or their pursuit lightly, even if they're using drugs. They're still doing something that's very intense and it takes a lot of motivation. And so it's not like, even if you are a drug user, you just stick a needle in your butt and you grow and you look amazing. No, you still have to put a lot of effort into it. But I realized pretty quickly I was not going to become the next Arnold Schwarzenegger for lots of reasons. And I wasn't willing to take the risk of drug use that potentially could set me up for all sorts of heart issues or liver, or, all sorts of organ damage later in life. So I just wasn't willing to go down that path. But I still had this mindset of utilizing nutrition and exercising in a very specific way that shifted from, I would say, a sports performance or physical performance perspective to a health perspective. And so as I got into graduate school and learning about the body, and then really at that time, I had no interest in, or I didn't think I had any interest in research, but as I went through my educational training and learned about the academic lifestyle, then research really appealed to me. And fortunately, after a few years of trying to figure out how to get there, I was able to make some connections with a few important dietary supplement companies that decided they wanted to fund studies and some of their products. And so that led me into creating a niche at the University of Miami, where I worked at the Miller School of Medicine for about 20 years, running clinical trials in nutrition, dietary supplements, and exercise, which you know, on the surface seemed to be a pretty rewarding career, but quite frankly, behind the door, so to speak, the world of trying to do that type of work in a very conventional, conservative medical school environment where most, if not, you know, 90 something percent of the people are doing either pharmacology or mm-hmm. genetics or something that ultimately could lead to a deal with big pharma or a big biotech company. And that was not what I was doing. And so mm-hmm. it was a very difficult way for those of your listeners who don't know. You think of being a professor, you're in the ivory tower, you're teaching students, you're walking around with your fedora hat looking important and, you know, saying meaningful things. That couldn't be further from the truth. You're in just as much of a dog eat dog world as you are in any corporate setting, simply because everything is so driven by funding. And so I learned in those years that, you know, these bureaucrats, these so-called talking heads of public health, don't really, they may pay publicly some attention to nutrition or natural ways of, people throw around nutrition and alternative, which to me actually makes me angry. There's nothing mm-hmm. alternative about nutrition. Nutrition is the foundation. It's not the alternative, but that's another conversation. But anyway, I conducted all these things and I made some key discoveries with my colleagues on polysaccharides that ultimately led me to exiting academics, because when we made some very significant discoveries with our formula with people with Alzheimer's disease, I felt for sure that that was going to be the impetus to having a really just exciting and long career in research, helping people deal with this terrible, tragic disease that's the sixth leading killer of Americans, because we actually showed something that had never been published before and still hasn't. After publishing the first paper back in 2013 showing that this polysaccharide-based formula had clinically and statistically significant improvements in cognitive function in people with moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease. Again, that had not been published before, and it hasn't been published since with anything. I don't care if you want to talk about the 5 FDA-approved drugs for dementia, any type of diet, any mm-hmm. other dietary supplement, exercise, hyperbaric oxygen, acupuncture, music, that sound, red light, I don't care what you want to talk about. Nothing else has showed what we showed in that first paper. And I was so happy and so excited with what we had showed that I started preparing these grants for Alzheimer's Association and NIH. And after four attempts with, again, these so-called, you know, people that may publicly talk about their interest in nutrition and health, I got nothing in response. And so that was the beginning of the end for me of deciding I was not going to spend the next 20, 30 or whatever number of years I had left in academics, banging my head against the wall, making it bleed profusely, trying to get these people to appreciate, and not just appreciate the value, but actually help me extend what we had showed. And we only were able to run that study because of the generosity of a family who had heard my colleague, Dr. Reg McDaniel, speak about some work he had done with the polysaccharides with people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And this lady approached him after his lecture, and she and her husband formed a relationship with him over time, and they agreed and decided to give him some money to do research, but it just had to be in Alzheimer's because of their loss of four family members with that disease, and him not being at an academic institution at that time, turned to me and said, John, we have funding to do a study in the polysaccharides, but it has to be in Alzheimer's. And that was the only reason that we were even able to run that study, and potentially the only reason I'm even talking to you guys today, because I don't know where my life would have gone, you know, and what path it would have taken had we not conducted that study. But mm-hmm. that's a very long-winded answer to tell you that I've had interest in, you know, health in general for many, many years, starting out really more on the exercise side and then shifting more into the nutrition side later in life, just simply because of, in my opinion, if you look at the science, if you look at what's published in PubMed, which I think is the best source, if for those of you who don't know, go to PubMed.gov, and that's really the clearinghouse of most of the credible scientific published information in the world, although since COVID, we've definitely had some issues with authenticity and credibility, but nonetheless, you know, those kinds of issues aside, if you look at all the information that's been published related to different behaviors and things that we can actually modify in our lives in terms of how we take care of our body, nutrition is number one without question. I mean, there's just so much more information related to what nutrition can do for you, or in the opposite case, if you're eating, you know, junk food every day, all the time, day after day, and if you're drinking too much alcohol, then, and if you want to loosely put alcohol in with other nutrition, quote unquote, behaviors, then, you know, it can have a very detrimental effect on you. But compared to, again, any other lifestyle or thing that we do every day, any behavior that we do every day, nutrition far away is number one. I mean, there's, you know, you have other diseases or conditions related to the use of tobacco, you know, specific types of cancer or throat disease or lung or heart disease. And those are obviously very attributable to smoking or the use of tobacco. But beyond those, nutrition far and away is, you know, again, your number one, it's either your number one benefit or your number one detriment in terms of how you utilize it. And it's easy to flip that switch too. Like you can, if you are in bad shape, if you're obese, if you've got diabetes, hypertension, all these other things that are killing us today, the body is very resilient, and you don't have to feel hopeless and you're subjected to just taking drugs the rest of your life. You can actually utilize nutrition to your advantage to overcome that. But
yeah, absolutely. We want to dive in more on the nutrition side of things and also get into a discussion on polysaccharides. We're speaking with Dr. John Lewis. He is founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition, and we are going to get into our conversation on polysaccharides right after the break. Stick around. You are listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Thanks for being with us today. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas, and I failed to mention at the top of the program that Carson Sellers is also here with us in the studio, marketing specialist with Transitions Life Care. That's a demerit for me as a host for not introducing Carson earlier. But our guest today is Dr. John Lewis, and he is founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition. And we just heard a brief synopsis of his transition from academia to the business world, and we want to get into a discussion, Mary, on polysaccharides.
What a mouthful. Polysaccharides. I to be honest, I've heard of them. I have no idea what they are or what they do. Dr. Lewis, can you start us there? What are polysaccharides?
Sure. I just briefly skimmed over that in our last segment, but polysaccharides is a word that people, psychologists use a term called the teachable moment, and it's very applicable to the term polysaccharide simply because as Americans for how many decades now we've been led to believe that anytime you hear the word sugar you think bad, right? Like there's not even the opportunity to think of, well, wait a minute, there could possibly be a sugar out there that is good. So break down the word polysaccharide. It has two main components, poly meaning many and saccharide meaning sugar. So you could have said, I could have said, we could have said good or many sugars. And so there are actually sugars in Mother Nature that are good for us. And so it's another one of my annoyances when I hear this, you know, these talking heads out there talking about all sugar being bad for us. That's absolutely a false statement. And I'll tell you why. At least two primary characteristics of sugars dictate whether they're good or bad for us. And so the first is their biochemical structure. And you have three basic types. You have the monosaccharides, the simplest form, which is one molecule essentially. You have disaccharides, di meaning two, so you have two molecules that are attached together. And then the polysaccharides that are many different glucose units attached together by these different glycosidic bonds that are very complex and dense in structure. And so when you look at those things biochemically, you cannot even draw them on a piece of paper. They're like a 5D image in a way. And all of that coded information, not just from the polysaccharides, but literally anything that we put into our mouths, is information that our genes interpret to then instruct how our cells function. And again, that's to either our advantage or our disadvantage, depending on what that material is. And so you have three different basic types of saccharides with, again, a more increasingly complex structure depending on the type. And then you have the source. So a simple sugar, a monosaccharide like high fructose corn syrup, we know it spikes your glucose, it spikes your insulin, it creates all of these other oxidative and inflammatory pathways that if you're eating this stuff every day over time, you're setting yourself up for bad news eventually. And so that, I think we can all agree that that's the type of sugar that we want to avoid. A disaccharide is something like table sugar, white sugar, sucrose. And again, if you're eating that stuff every day, it's probably not necessarily the best thing that you should consume. And then you have these polysaccharides, and the ones that my colleagues and I have studied particularly are from aloe vera and rice bran. And I mean, folks, I would just put these up against any other material that Mother Nature provides for us for a health promoting benefit. They just have such incredible, amazing benefit to our health that we've published time and time again in all of our different studies over this nearly last 20 year period. And in particular, what they appear to do besides lots of other activities is that they become signaling mechanisms for our immune system. And so they're just incredibly efficacious and dynamic materials that, and it doesn't matter if you're vegan or the other extreme, carnivore, or somewhere in between, paleo, keto, Mediterranean zone, South Beach, you know, whatever your dietary preference is, you're 9 times out of 10, you're not getting these things from your diet, and especially aloe vera. In the case of aloe vera, first of all, you mentioned that plant, and most people think of that as a topical solution for a sunburn or a cut or a wound. You don't even think of using that polysaccharide in the gel orally to have a healing benefit. And you can't drink the gel either. The gel is 98.5%, 99% water. So my goodness, you'd have to drink bucket loads of that gel to get enough of the polysaccharide content to have any therapeutic or physiological benefit. So on that side, again, forget it. Nobody's consuming that stuff orally to have it in a concentrated amount in a powder where it can really do its wondrous activity. And then rice bran, something like 70 or 80% of the rice sold in the world is white. So that means when the rice kernel is brought in from the field and it's beginning the processing stages, the husk or the hull is the outer shell that gets stripped off first. We can't eat that. It's completely indigestible, probably as hard as a rock too. And then the next layer is the bran. That's what gives brown rice, for example, its color. It's that rice bran. But unfortunately, most of the world does not want to eat brown rice. So that gets stripped off and either thrown away or fed to livestock. And then you have that big white endosperm. That's what you're eating, which is basically digestible fiber that, you know, again, most of the world prefers to consume. So most people, even if you're eating brown rice every day, which I eat brown rice most days of the week, you're still probably not getting enough of that polysaccharide content in the rice bran to have what we would consider to be a therapeutic benefit. But if you take it in a dietary supplement, and this is where I would argue, among other reasons, why supplements are very important, not just what you eat, you know, from your food and your diet, but also what you supplement with to add on top of the benefit that food brings us. But we really need these things in supplemental form. And again, we're not talking about massive amounts. If you're eating, I don't know what the average American eats today, 2,500, 3,000, 3,500 calories. We're only talking maybe a couple of grams of material of these polysaccharides, depending on your circumstances. And it's not like, you know, again, for those, I mean, there's some people out there today that are really fanatical about ketosis and, you know, keeping in ketosis status and all of this, a couple of grams or a few hundred milligrams of these polysaccharides are not going to mess you up. So if you think of it that way, because it's a carbohydrate, then you're really missing out on a wonderful opportunity to benefit your body because of how efficacious these materials are that we've published now. I don't, going on 20 articles total of all of the combined clinical trials that we've conducted over the years using these two particular polysaccharides.
Yeah, that's really,
I don't know if that helps to better understand for you guys and your listeners what polysaccharides are, but I've tried to make that as simple as I can.
Yeah, no, that's a thorough explanation, and we've got a few more questions for you in our final segment with Dr. John Lewis, founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition, and we will take a quick break and come right back. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic. Hey, if you want to learn more about Transitions Life Care, be sure to go online to transitionslifecare.org, transitionslifecare.org. So many resources available to you. It's a great website. Check it out, transitionslifecare.org. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas, and our guest on the line is Dr. John Lewis. He is founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition. We've been having a discussion related to polysaccharides, and Carson Sellers is also in the studio here with us, marketing specialist. So, Carson, we've got one more segment here with Dr. Lewis. Where are we going to turn to next?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess just going off the same topic, so can you get the same benefits from polysaccharides in your diet and food as you can get in a dietary supplement?
Well, lots of fruits, vegetables, seaweed, exotic mushrooms, all of those foods have different levels of polysaccharide content, and I can't speak to being an expert in all those different foods. And I would tell you, in nutrition in general, if somebody proposes the idea that he or she knows everything about nutritional science, that person is probably a bit of a charlatan. It's just too big of a field. I don't care if you're the smartest person in the world to know everything about nutrition, but I would tell you that, as I mentioned in the last segment, nobody eats aloe vera. Most of the world does not eat brown rice. So even if you were eating brown rice, you're probably still not getting enough polysaccharide in the rice bran to have nutritional value or therapeutic benefit from it. And again, with aloe vera, you know, no one is eating the gel. And even if you did, it's 99% water. So you couldn't possibly get enough polysaccharide content from all of that gel to have any therapeutic benefit or value. So this is, again, where I would tell you that taking a dietary supplement can be very effective and very beneficial on top of your food. I'm not suggesting that anybody can just take dietary supplements and be healthy. You still have to eat a good diet as well. But where these polysaccharides, let's call them, you know, filling in the gap, so to speak, is a way of getting this extra health promoting boost that foods cannot provide. And I also should make sure that our listeners understand I'm not using these terms to suggest we're using nutrition to treat disease. We're using nutrition to enable the body to repair, restore, and heal itself and return to homeostasis if you do have any type of health challenge, which is a far different paradigm from treating disease with drugs. So I want to be very clear that I'm not suggesting we're treating disease with nutrition here.
Yeah, thanks for the clarification on that, because that's something important, and Good question, Carson.
Absolutely.
So what do you do every day to maintain and optimize your health? What are some things or biggest myths about nutrition that you can do to help maintain your health over time?
Well, that's a loaded question. I've been eating a whole food plant-based diet for the last 27 years, and I was introduced to a website called notmilk.com in the mid to late 90s that was an amazing eye-opener for me because, again, as Americans, we've all been led to believe historically that milk is good for us, it's very healthy, but when you read the research about all the potential downside to consuming cow's milk every day, it's very much an eye-opener. And that was really, for me, a big shift in looking at nutrition and what you actually do to your body. So I'm an advocate, and I have been, because it's what I do every day, eating a plant-based diet for the last 27 years. I just believe if you're eating a lot of animal food in your diet every day, you are setting yourself up for a lot of complications. And we don't have, we're running out of time here, and I appreciate that. So we don't have a lot of time to go down that path and get into more detail. But number one, I would encourage people, don't take my word for it. Again, go to PubMed.gov, do your own homework, look into your own literature searches, and you'll verify what I'm sharing with you. And myth related to that, I would say, is that we, again, have been almost indoctrinated to believe that we can only get protein from animal tissue, and that's complete nonsense as well. All the other animals that we eat get their protein from plants. And so I'm not protein deficient. I haven't been protein deficient ever. If you looked at me, you'd say, wow, that dude, he looks pretty big. He's pretty muscular, and all he eats is plants. And so there's just a big myth surrounding this idea of protein can only be delivered through animal tissue, and that's just absolutely not true. So I think it's very important, again, for people to understand that everything you put into your mouth is coded information to your genes. Your genes don't do anything until they receive information from the environment. And that's probably another big myth too, is we think everything that happened to our grandparents and our parents and even other family members, maybe siblings, makes us have a genetic predisposition to either heart disease or cancer or all these other things. And that's about 90-something% of the time untrue. We were not born with bad genes. We were born with, we came into a family that had essentially bad behavior and didn't take care of themselves, just like my grandparents and their siblings and my parents and their siblings. We adopt those behaviors from the people we grew up with and around, and then somehow along the way, we misconstrue that into thinking, oh, I've got a genetic predisposition to heart attacks or breast cancer or whatever. And that's just, again, in 90-something% of cases, bogus. That's not even true. It's about what you do. And so you want your genes to respond positively to the information that they interpret essentially from your behavior. And of course, we get exposed to things that we can't do much about, radiation and all the pollution in the world. So those are things that, we do get exposed to, and unless we're living on the North Pole or somewhere that we're very far away from all that. So don't be, misled by that myth either. I mean, and those work really closely together, because again, you can do a lot about overcoming this idea that you're predisposed to something with nutrition and with eating properly. And of course, I mentioned exercise a little bit in my bodybuilding. I still lift every day. Strength training for me is such a key component to my lifestyle and the benefits that I derive from that. So all these things go into combined creating a healthier you. If you do these things every day and you maintain consistency and you take care of yourself. And then probably the other very last quick point is there is no magic bullet. Anybody that's trying to sell you a magic bullet, again, is probably a charlatan, because it takes many different behaviors to create a healthy you. It's good nutrition, movement, exercise, supplementing with things like the polysaccharides, getting enough sleep, managing your stress, not using tobacco, not using or very limited use of alcohol. All of these things go into creating a healthy you, or not, if you don't do them properly. So this is part of my own life's philosophy and how I live every day. And I do take the polysaccharides every day, by the way, because again, can't get them from diet, so I supplement with them. And this is how I live every single day. And this is the message that I give to people every single day.
Well, thank you for providing some clarification. It's helpful to have your perspective. Dr. Lewis, if folks want to find more information about you, what's the best way to do that?
Our best source of information is drlewisnutrition.com. That's D-R, no period, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, nutrition.com. You can find me on all the typical social media channels under Dr. Lewis Nutrition as well. But the website has the most impactful and most in-depth information around all of our research and the product Daily Brain Care that we created out of all this research. And so it's a great way of looking at all the information. You've got a website there that, you know, really is dense with a lot of information to be helpful for people. And we have email address, phone number. If anybody has questions, I'm always happy to answer those as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And folks can follow up if they're interested in learning more. Thank you to Dr. John Lewis, founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition, for your time today. We've got another segment left to go. Please stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas, of course, representing Transitions Life Care, and we're going to be talking about communication tips and focusing on advocating for respite. Mm-hmm. And Mary, this is something that is so, so important, and we say this all the time, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's also very, very hard for people to do because, you know, anyone who's been involved in any part of a caregiving journey knows the stress that is put on the caregiver. And mm-hmm. a lot of times it's just so hard to take a step back when you are focused on the person who needs care. Mm-hmm. You need some care as well. And you need respite mm-hmm. in order to be at your best.
Respite is rest. And you can't, you have to be strong yourself to be able to care for others. And without that, you'll get run down and it can be very hard on you. But it's such a hard conversation to have. It's something that's not easy. I was talking to my dad about it actually yesterday. I was over at his house and we were talking about my grandfather and the importance of taking a break. And he's just started a rotation with my aunt and they trade off weekends on doing the groceries. And I think that alone has been monumental in providing him a little bit of respite. But beyond that, I think I also had a conversation with a friend who's a caregiver and she's really struggling with this as well. And so I wanted to talk about it on the show about communication and advocating for yourself. You need a break. And that conversation's not always easy for the person that you're taking care of as well. And I think there's a lot of guilt and people feel guilty taking a break. But you have to think inward first and your feelings and what you're feeling and the exhaustion, and it is valid. And it is not a selfish thing to do. And I think a lot of people feel selfish taking a break when they're taking care of somebody else. And that's a hard feeling to take on. So there are some tips that I wanted to provide, and I've done some research on this and talking with my dad and others, and wanted to share them with you all as well. But first, prepare your conversation with intention. Why do you want respite? Is it you time? Is it you need to take a rest? Your work is busy as well, or you may have children. You know, the sandwich generation of caregivers is growing pretty rapidly, and you may need to go to more soccer games or whatever it may be. Do you need to hire extra help? That's something that's really important in a conversation that was really valuable for my dad and talking to my grandfather about either assisted living or we need to hire a nurse to help out. Those are very tough conversations, but it's good to prepare for those in advance with intention. Research your options first. Find out what's practical. If private duty is something that you're taking on, look at cost and something. And schedules and things like that. And how will we benefit from you taking a break is an important part of the conversation. We will all benefit from you taking a break and being able to share why. And pre-planning will really help guide that conversation. And I think it's something that's really important. I know we were just, Jason and I were just talking about even pre-planning for the show. You know, we talk, it's hard to have conversations sometimes. It's always important to pre-plan. Second, label your feelings. Put your feelings into words. Write them down. Read them. See them. Understand them. I take time to journal every night, and it's something I didn't do before, but writing down my feelings and going back and looking at them is something that has really helped me validate how I feel every day. And it helps me advocate for myself in other situations. So label your feelings, put them into words, read them, go back and read them. If you've had a hard day, go back and read a couple days prior when it was good and realize that it always isn't that way. So putting out your feelings and seeing them and understanding them will help you advocate for yourself. Then pick a time to talk. Don't do it when everyone is alert and in the height of something, or, you know, right before you're doing an important caregiving task. Make sure that everyone is calm and rational. No one's overwhelmed. We're not right, you know, going to bed where everyone's a little bit drowsy. Make sure that everyone's awake. So make sure you pick the right time. You don't want to be hangry. You don't want your loved one to be hangry. I know that's not, I can't be hangry and have a good conversation. So just pick the right time to talk and really think about it and plan it out. And following positive communication is always key. Refer to your feelings that you wrote down, why you're feeling this way. Use I statements to share how you feel instead of you statements that place blame on your loved one. You is a hard thing for someone to hear. Instead of saying, I feel this way, I am tired, and I need a break, I need to take a nap, whatever it may be. Speak very soothingly. Listen actively, and listening is a key part of this conversation, and hear the feedback that you're getting from your loved one. Take pauses. A lot of the times, if you're dealing with someone that may have a little bit of cognitive decline, that's something that's very important, to take pauses and listen and really get the active feedback. Then you want to share positive outcomes. Like I said earlier, what will benefit for this time to yourself? What will benefit your loved one for you taking this time? What will they gain? You'll be in a better mood, or I can cook better dinner if you give me a little more time to go grocery shopping. Or, you know, there's a lot of benefits of you taking rest and being more fully available when you are there, if you're not as tired or you're not as stressed, or, you know, all of these things kind of combine into one. And it's important that you take rest for yourself and take this respite care. And then finally, create a care plan. You know, if it involves, like I said with my grandfather, there was nursing aides that we have. If it's working with an adult day facility, there's some great adult daycares and day facilities around that provide care during the day and activities during the day. You can drop them off and pick them up. There are a lot of great options around us in this area. And if you're on hospice, like Leah said and earlier in the show, it's part of the hospice benefit. So you can talk to your social worker and set up the right volunteer for you. If it's you need someone to come into your house and just give you a break while you do grocery shopping, you can meet with your hospice social worker and discuss all the things that you need, and they'll be able to put someone in place to help you get a little bit of respite. They also have a respite stay where you can take your loved one to a facility and have a longer stay respite as well as part of the hospice benefit. It's all provided as part of the benefit. So if you have a vacation that you need to go on and get away for a few days, that's a great option if you're on hospice. Also, if you're on palliative care, you can talk to your team there and they can help you find the right fit as well. But respite is so important. And I think that people don't realize it until they're too tired and they are too worn down. And it is very heavy. And you don't want to feel that way and get to that point. So taking these breaks earlier and being able to have these conversations and communicating and advocating for yourself as a caregiver is so important. And you should not take on the guilt of this. And put those feelings down into words, validate them, advocate for yourself, and really get the rest you need as a caregiver.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And it's especially something to focus on early on in a caregiving journey, because I think just naturally, one, we have a lot of energy at that point. And also, you know, when you're speaking with family members and they're asking how you and your loved one are, your natural response is going to be, hey, we're doing okay. You know, we're getting by. We're getting through this. We're still learning. And you may be kind of conditioning your mind to think, well, you know, we got this. Everything's okay. But as you said, you don't want to reach that point where you're overwhelmed and it's become too late.
Right.
And then everyone's going to be looking at you like, well, hey, what's going on here? You know, you've been telling us everything's okay, and now that's not the case. So maybe set those expectations that, hey, you know, I'm okay now, but maybe in a few weeks I may need some help.
That's a great point. You know, that kind of happened in our situation with my grandfather. My grandmother died, and we were all right there, you know, and I think this happens with many others as well. When someone passes and their spouse is still here, everyone surrounds them, and everybody was around, and everybody was helping. The grandkids were visiting, you know, cousins, family members from out of state. Everyone was there and helping, and it's also happens at holidays. You see it quite often around holidays when caregivers are, there's a lot of people around, and Christmas is going on, or Hanukkah, whatever it may be, you know, everyone is there, and then it's a couple months later when you start to feel this, and not everyone is there anymore, and it's down to the main caregivers, and then that's when this is so important. And I think that it can go for a while before you realize how important it is, so just think about these things and advocate for yourself and have those conversations so you can have respite as well.
Yeah, these are wonderful tips, and I think there's even some application outside of advocating for yourself for respite. There's probably a lot of applications for a variety of relationships. Those are wonderful tips. So again, if you missed any part of this segment, you can go online to WPTF.com, click on the podcast button. From there, find Aging Matters, and you can go back and listen to this episode. Maybe you want to share this segment with someone who's in a caregiving situation. So that's a wonderful opportunity for you. WPTF.com, click on the podcast button and find Aging Matters there. We're taking a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680. WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.